It's time for our monthly RNIB campaigns updates. What do? Well, we chat with Costa Asprew and guests to learn a little bit more about some of the current and forthcoming campaigns. And we also look at some of the successes. And ultimately, we hope to get you guys involved in campaigning as well. Costa, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Alan. Great to join you again.
So we've got a few topics we're going to chat about today. We've got some guide dog refusals, we're looking at access to work, and of course we'll be encouraging people to get involved as well. So where would you like to start today?
I think we can talk about employment and access to work. And obviously we campaign to challenge social exclusion and bring about positive change locally and nationally. And coming to employment, we find that only 1 in 4 blind or partially sighted people of working age are in employment, and that's compared to 3 out of 4 people in the general population. So it's clear that blind and partially sighted people are hit hard by the disability employment gap. When we come to access to work, it's an important government-funded scheme that can play a key role in supporting disabled people to start and stay in work. It funds a range of vital support and equipment, and research shows that it is very much valued by blind and partially sighted people, many of whom say they would not be in work without it. Despite this, we hear of many practical problems in how the scheme works, which need to be addressed. Rosa Gomez, an elected councillor in Redbridge, spoke to us about the difficulties she experienced with access to work. And we started by asking Rosa what she did in her role as a councillor.
I was elected in May last year for the Churchfields ward in the Redbridge borough. And my work pretty much entails engaging with the residents, the constituents, ensuring that their needs are being met, and also attending meetings at the town hall and other events. As councillors, we ensure that we have the resources to deliver public services.
In order to carry out your work, you use the services or support from Access to Work, but that's not been an easy process. What have the problems been?
Well, I should say that I am registered blind and I'm also physically impaired. As a councillor, I don't believe we have many disabled councillors, but certainly it seemed that it was unusual for an applicant of Access to Work to make an application as an elected member and not employed by an organisation. So it was new to members of staff to have Access to Work, DWP, and the process was very slow. It took quite a while for them to get back to me and give me a response, but I was fortunate that the council made reasonable adjustments and provided me with a paid support worker until I heard of my claim months later.
Were there also problems in submitting claims? Because people who perhaps use Access to Work have to submit monthly accounts or invoices, if like for travel to work or support workers. Was that problematic as well?
This has been the main problem, the main stumbling block, because having found good PAs, submitting claim forms had to be done by post, and these were being lost. I was sending them to the Harrow Job Centre, who then sent it through internal post to the handling department in Wolverhampton. Now, in that internal post, that's when the problems occurred, because it was getting lost, so I was asked to redo the whole thing again and resend it, which delayed payments by up to 2 months. The first time round, I think 3 months for invoices to be paid.
You contacted RNIB about these problems as well. What was the next step there?
RNIB was extremely helpful. They were very responsive. And they got in touch with the MP as well as I did, and sought a meeting with the Minister for Works and Pensions, because, you know, we were concerned, basically, that although this happened to me as a councillor and I had resources such as, you know, knowing what to do, contacting the RNIB, contacting Access to Work, contacting my local MP, that many other people out there may not have been fortunate enough to get this sorted out for them.
So what happened at this meeting with the Minister, Justin Tomlinson, then? You put your case forward, and what came of that?
again, it was a very good meeting, and I was pleased that I had parliamentary officer from the RNIB there. He had his team from Access to Work, DWP, there, who were listening to my concerns. But I made it very clear that it wasn't only my particular case, but I was actually sitting to speak to him because I was very concerned over the many thousands of people trying to get access to work, payments, and not being successful, and how that could jeopardise their employment opportunities, or if they were self-employed.
What was his reaction to your comments?
He was very good. He responded well, and he promised to look into this with his team, especially when I said that sending all these claim forms by post was not practical, and that in this day and age, really, things should be sent digitally. So he said that he was going to look into that by making claims over the internet.
So a positive meeting with the minister. This is an initial meeting. So what are your hopes then for the future?
My hope is that they will look into the internal procedures, make it far easier for claimants, that people do pick up phones, people who are unable to do it online, and that the claims don't take so long in payment. Pretty much, look at the internal processes and overhaul the system in a way that is friendlier to use for people with disabilities, and that it basically encourages those wanting to enter work opportunities.
Costa, some real issues faced by Rosa there, but I suppose, speaking out, she actually has managed to at least get on a pathway to change.
That's right. And we obviously heard about the difficulties she faced, but as you said, there's some possibility for change, and we're really hoping that will lead to concrete changes. So I'm joined here by Emily Marr, who's RNIB Parliamentary and Public Affairs Officer, who can tell us a little bit more about that.
It's fantastic to be here with you today to talk about Rosa's Access to Work case. I think Rosa's a fantastic example of when taking action and speaking up does bring about real change and real results. What we did is we supported Rosa throughout the whole process about the issues she was facing with access to work. So we went and met with her MP, Wes Streeting. We helped draft a letter to the minister outlining the difficulties Rosa was facing and asking for a meeting, and then briefed Wes and Rosa ahead of that meeting, which I attended. The meeting, I think, was a pretty successful one. We had some key asks. For example, the access to work system is in the process of digitising, and we said we had to be involved in that process to make sure that the access to work system would be accessible. So, for example, testing the online version with screen readers like JAWS. We also take part in stakeholder forums, which meet regularly to discuss accessibility issues and other issues around access to work for blind and partially sighted people. Talking more specifically about Rose's case, agreed with Justin that blind and partially sighted people could use email in the interim before the system goes online. And I think these are really, really positive changes. And we did get some key assurances from the minister, and we will be in regular contact with the department to make sure that he follows up on all these promises. So a really, really successful piece of work with Rosa. And it's all thanks to her that she had the confidence to raise this issue in the first place. So if any other people out there experience issues, it may be access to work, it may be something completely different, I think Rosa's example shows there is action you can take. So I would strongly advise you to get in touch with your MP, perhaps ask if you could meet with them to talk about your concerns, and always let us know. We're happy to support you, to attend those meetings with you, to help brief you. But the main thing is taking action and getting in touch with us and your MP.
Absolutely, Emily, and we will give contact details a little bit later. We're going to squeeze in another issue as well, which RNIB has been involved in. And many of our listeners, Costa, are familiar with guide dog refusals, whether it's taxis, whether it's shops or restaurants. And again, we're going to highlight why it's important to speak out.
Exactly. And unfortunately, as you've said, it's not uncommon for people to find they're refused access to services like restaurants or hotels because they're travelling with a guide dog. And as we know, guide dogs are a vital mobility aid for their users, and being turned away can leave people unable to do everyday activities and undermine independence. Terry Ballon found herself unable to book a private hire taxi. As you might have guessed, it was because she told the operator she was travelling with a guide dog.
So in November of last year, I was working at a conference at Preston North End football ground with two of our blind and partially sighted volunteers. And at the end of the day, I ordered a taxi, booked it from the ground to the train station, confirmed the booking, and at that point said, "And I need to advise you, I have a guide dog." He repeated the fact that he had no dog-friendly drivers. And again, I said, it's illegal because she is a guide dog and you have to take assistance dogs because it breaches the Equality Act 2010, and it is a legal obligation for you to carry assistance dogs.
So the controller themselves actually said, no, we're not taking your dog, because normally if we hear about refusals, it's the drivers themselves, but you didn't even get that far.
That's correct. It was actually the desk operator that said, you know, he had no dog-friendly drivers, so I couldn't even get the booking.
Now, as you say, this is a breach of the Equalities Act. I think the only way a driver or a controller can refuse if the driver themselves has an allergy and they're certified by the doctor. So they were breaking the law there. So, and you had to arrange for another taxi, and obviously that has an impact as well. It could make you late for things. And I suppose also gets you a bit annoyed as well.
Well, it's not just about getting ignored. It really is a corrosive effect. You know, this was an instance where I was actually stood inside somewhere safe with other people. But there have been occasions when I have been left standing on a dark, less salubrious area waiting for a taxi. So it's a corrosive effect on your confidence, and I'm constantly thinking every time I have to book a taxi, even with regular companies, am I going to be refused? Am I going to have to challenge the driver, or am I going to be left in, you know, on the street?
What did you decide to do after that? Did you take this further?
Well, certainly. So whilst I was in the next taxi that I was able to book, I spoke to guide dogs and asked them if they could provide me with the contact details for the local authority licensing officer. That was on the Thursday. On the Tuesday, I spoke to the licensing officer. They went over to the company, got a recording of the telephone conversation, which meant that they had absolute evidence that what I had said was true. And then on the 22nd of May this year, it went to Preston Magistrates Court, where Eagle Star Taxis in Preston pleaded guilty. And I'm really, really pleased that they pleaded guilty and that they have said that they will ensure that training will be implemented. Now, they were fined £1,779.04. And I have reason to believe that the £1,000 compensation I received is the highest that's ever been awarded. But for me, it was the absolute principle. We need taxi drivers to understand that they are breaking the law. If they've got an exemption certificate with actual medical evidence of that, then that's absolutely fine. And I have actually been in a situation where I have had a driver who is exempt with a certificate who couldn't get his certificate out fast enough, but still actually insisted on taking me. So there are some models of really good practice. And I'm hoping that people will use the toolkit that we recently launched to help them challenge these access refusals.
Again, Costa, Terry took action, positive action, and there was a good outcome from this. And once again, we're encouraging people to speak out, but there's all sorts of help as well if they need to do that.
RNIB and Guide Dogs are teaming up in the fight against guide dog users being illegally turned away from businesses or services, just as we've heard about. So we've launched our Equality Act 2010 toolkit for guide dog users across England, Scotland and Wales, and the Disability Discrimination Act toolkit for guide dog users in Northern Ireland. These toolkits provide information to help people understand their rights, and include practical guidance and information to challenge access refusals. The first step is usually to make a complaint against the service provider, and many disputes can be resolved quickly this way. But if not, having a copy of the service provider's response in writing, or even knowing that they're not responding if it goes that way, that can be an important step to refer to if you take further action. And actually, when we talk about taxis and private hire vehicles, you can also complain directly to the driver's licensing authority, which could result in a prosecution against the driver and the license being suspended or revoked.
Absolutely, Costa. I think we can all agree that speaking out really does make a difference, and that help and support is there if we want it. But we're also encouraging more people to get involved in campaigning, because although Terry and Rose have those issues which were very personal to them, you know, these are across the UK. You know, people face these on a day-to-day basis, and it's only through getting involved in campaigning that we can really make a difference.
Taking action to challenge unfair decisions and campaign against social exclusion can take time and effort, but the results can be long-lasting, and we can't make it happen without blind and partially sighted people getting involved to make that change happen. We have some great resources to help you, and we can put you in touch with your local regional campaigns officer if you'd like to campaign to make your local area more accessible. For more information on the RNIB Equality Act 2010 Toolkit, which we mentioned today, you can speak to the RNIB Sight Loss Advice Service on 03 03 123 9999. And for more information on our campaigns work, you can call in on the same number or email campaigns@rnib.org.uk or visit www.rnib.org.uk/campaigning.
And we'll have more from Costa and the campaigns team next month. And to Costa and to Emily, thanks to both of you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.